The Samsung Solve for Tomorrow contest ends this week, Thursday, November 9th. Stay tuned at the end of the show to learn how you and your students can enter. Different Schools for a Different World, episode 189.
The 10-Minute Teacher Podcast with Vicki Davis. Every weekday, you'll learn powerful, practical ways to be a more remarkable teacher today.
Today, we're talking with my friend, Dr. Scott McLeod, about his new book, Different Schools for a Different World, that he co-authored with Dean Shoresky. Now, Scott, what are some of the things that you think are preventing kids from learning?
I think they're bored out of their minds most of the time. I think that we see that manifest physically in terms of those kids who are chronically absent, tardy, those who drop out, et cetera. But then there's the ones who are compliant and show up, but they're mentally checked out. And I think that's probably our biggest barrier to powerful learning right now.
There are some people who would say kids have been bored forever. I was bored when I was a kid and it didn't hurt me. Well, what do you say to that?
Well, again, they're compliant, but I don't know if they're learning much. If you ask most of those people how much they remember or what kind of powerful learning they experienced when they were in school, they're often struggle to articulate what that looked like.
Okay, so what do we do to tackle this problem?
So I think a couple of things, right? I mean, obviously schools as systemic structures need to change quite a bit. I've been trying to talk to schools about four big shifts. The shifts from low-level recall and regurgitation to deeper learning, the shift from teacher-directed to greater student agency, the shift from isolated, disconnected classroom work to more real-world, authentic work, and then finally, using technology in robust ways to facilitate those first three. Those four shifts seem to resonate with folks because they have seen the power of those, at least in small doses within their systems.
They do resonate. They make sense, but why is it so hard to make those shifts?
Because schools have incredible inertia and we're set up for a different time, right? Lauren Resnick, who did this wonderful study for the federal government, said that, you know, our schools were never designed to prepare large numbers of critical thinkers and problem solvers, which is exactly what we need now. They were designed to prepare a large number of compliant people who would go into basically automatable type manufacturing jobs and office jobs, where you're basically a replaceable cog in the wheel. And now all of a sudden, for a variety of reasons, we need kids who can do that higher level, complex, analytical, interpersonal work. And schools were never designed to do that. So we're basically have this massive paradigm shift that we got to figure out how to go through. And right now we're in that transition period.
We are. Now we have of course, the ESSER ESSA Act here in the U.S. that lets states have different measures. So we're talking about wanting to scale creativity. If lawmakers or policymakers ask us, you know, how do we measure that? Because we know, for example, say we did portfolios, you know, it's really hard to have a standard measure of portfolios between schools. How can we measure and encourage and create an environment where we have creativity?
Right. Well, we went down this road before, right? So we saw some movement in the 80s and 90s around portfolio development, around performance assessments, right, and other sort of indicators of authentic work. And we were figuring out ways to scale that up at the state level. And then when No Child Left Behind came along, it kind of cut all that off at the knees. We're sort of returning to that loop now, rediscovering what we had started to make progress on before and figuring out how to make that happen. You know, we have a number of states, particularly in New England, that are figuring out some kind of competency-based student exhibition or portfolio requirement that's necessary for graduation. More interesting initiatives that we're seeing is coming out of New York. We have a consortium of schools called the New York Performance Assessment Consortium or something like that. That's gotten some waivers from the State Department around accountability, and they're trying to figure out what common performance assessments would look like across districts that could be used for assessment purposes. So lots of sort of interesting things happening.
So in other words, we're just not there yet.
No. We're in this massive, messy transition period that's going to take much longer than, of course, you and I want it to. But it'll probably be a decade or two or more before it all shakes out.
Yeah, but what about all these kids now? I mean, doesn't every child deserve to have the opportunity to be more creative and innovative and invent and make and have deeper learning?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you and I feel an urgency around that. But other folks either don't feel that urgency or at least have some inkling that that's the directions we need to go, but don't have any ideas of how to accomplish that.
But I don't want to feel hopeless, Scott.
I'm not hopeless. I'm just trying to feel more patient.
Good luck with that. Like, you know, these children are just here. They're now. And I just think that we can do better. And how many years do we have to wait with people saying, but they have to take the test? I mean, really, how long do we have to live this?
Well, until we gain critical mindset with our communities and our educators and our policymakers, we're going to have to wait a while. So unfortunately, systems change slowly. It's easy to change at the individual level, right? You and I can make a mental shift, garner some resources and go, but getting whole systems to move is a whole nother matter. And so, yes, I feel that urgency just like you do. And I battle it every day, and I try to find ways to infect people with different kinds of urgencies and mindsets. But the reality is it's going to take some time.
Okay, so let's look at this one about student agency. Do you have some best practices and thoughts for really helping improve student agency in their own education?
Yeah, so my colleague, Julie Graber, and I created a technology integration protocol called, it has this horrible name called Trudicot. But it has a set of questions around agency that we've been having a lot of success with classroom teachers. And basically, the idea is that if a teacher has the interest or goal of increasing student agency in their day-to-day work, or maybe for a particular lesson or unit, there's a set of questions that you can ask yourself about how you're doing at accomplishing that purpose. So, and it's basic questions like, who gets to decide what is learned? Who gets to decide how it's learned? Who gets to decide what the work product is and how it's assessed? Who gets to pick the technology? Who's the primary user of the technology? Do students have the ability to be entrepreneurial, self-directed, and go beyond? Questions like that, right? And so if your answers are always teacher, 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 then what we're doing is we're using those same questions as pivot points for redesign. So we're saying to teachers, all right, so you have this goal of student agency and you have this unit in mind. And right now your answers are primarily teacher, teacher, no, no, whatever. What if we took this question around who gets to decide what the student work product looks like, right? And what if you want the answer to that to be student instead? How would you redesign this to get there? You know, what if you wanted to take that question around, do students have the opportunity to be self-directed and go beyond? Right now the answer is no. What would a lens look like where the answer was yes? How would you redesign this unit to get there? And we're having great conversations with teachers around what seem like fairly basic questions, but it's the structured process of it that I think really moves them in desired directions.
Deeper learning. How do we make that shift? And I know you can't give that answer in a minute, but just point us in a direction.
Sure. I think we're starting to make some movements in this direction. We're just not there yet. So we're looking at what kind of questions are we asking? Are they of greater cognitive complexity? Are we asking students to do meaningful real-world tasks that require students to apply what they're learning in new directions and at new depths? Anything that gets us beyond the regurgitative multiple choice item or fill-in-the-blank item is all good.
Yes, beyond regurgitative multiple choice, because, you know, many years ago, I can't remember who it was that was on Facebook. I think it was Alec Caros asked, you know, what did you used to think about education that you found is not true? And when I first got in, I thought that the test actually meant something until I realized that the kids forgot it the day after. And then I started doing projects, and then years later, and now even they're in their 20s and, dare I say it, some in their 30s, come back to me and talk to me about these projects and concepts that they've applied in their real life. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was teaching, right?
Yeah, I continue to be baffled by the game playing that we all engage in, where we pretend that students care about and remembered the thing we covered 4 weeks ago.
And I would say that that is somewhat of a game. And do they understand it or do they just memorize it?
Yeah, and they don't even hang on to it for very long, right? But, you know, in this pressure to cover stuff, we know in our hearts that they don't remember and hang on to this, but we continue to proceed as if they do.
You know, Scott's blog, every time I talk to him, I'm like, yep, his blog's named well, Dangerously Irrelevant, because he is a instigator, a question asker. And I hope that we all feel a little bit unsettled and dissatisfied, because we can never be complacent. I think the enemy is complacency and stagnancy. We have to make progress, because these children we need to make progress for them. And how can we scale creativity? I mean, that is what we need to have in our world today, particularly in more developed countries. We need that creativity. So this has been a fantastic conversation, and I hope that you'll take a look at the show notes and follow the links. And I'm definitely going to be asking some of these agency questions, Scott.
Cool. Thanks, Vicki. I'll get you a copy of the whole protocol. Maybe we can share that too.
Got 5 minutes? That is all it takes to enter the Samsung Solve for Tomorrow contest. If you're a U.S. public school teacher of grades 6 through 12, you and your students just need to come up with a STEAM idea, that's science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, that can help your community. If you're selected as a finalist, you'll win technology and prizes to help your STEAM project come to reality. But the entry period ends this week. Thursday, November 9th is the last day. Go to coolcatteacher.com/Samsung Solve to learn more. Good luck.
Thank you for listening to the 10-Minute Teacher Podcast. You can download the show notes and see the archive at coolcatteacher.com/podcast. Never stop learning.